Live from the General A to the Franciscan Brothers of Brooklyn here in beautiful Brooklyn Heights, New York. Welcome to Thank God for Monday. I'm Brother Greg Cellini of the Franciscan Brothers of Brooklyn, the Career Center at St. Francis College. Our millennial co-host Gina Pirro, St. Francis College class of 2017, with us once again. Great afternoon, Gina.
Good afternoon, Brother Greg.
The purpose of Thank God for Monday is to inspire you, our audience, to take personal responsibility for your professional satisfaction. We want to provide you hope, healing, and peace in these unprecedented, turbulent, uncertain times, motivate you to search deep inside yourself in this quest for fulfillment. Audience, it's really up to you as how to utilize the information we provide today. I want you to take full accountability for the decisions you make, resulting outcomes. And we've got two perfect guests, not one today, two perfect guests. We're honored to have with us today Karen Hurt and David Dye. They're the authors of Courageous Cultures, How to Build Teams of Micro-Innovators, Problem Solvers, and Customer Advocates. Great afternoon and welcome to Thank God Monday, Karen and David.
Oh, thank you so much for having us.
Pleasure to be here with you.
The pleasure is indeed all ours. Kindly share from what city you're speaking today.
We're coming in from Laurel, Maryland, which is right in between Baltimore and Washington.
Terrific. Just to give our audience a bit of a context for our conversation before we dive into some of these other things, kindly tell us a little bit about yourselves, and in particular about Let's Grow Leaders.
So Let's Grow Leaders is an international training and development firm. We've been working about 6 years in the making. So we were both executives before doing this. So I had 20 years at Verizon and David had 20 years of executive experience. And a couple of years ago, we wrote our first book called Winning Well, A Manager's Guide to Getting Results Without Losing Your Soul. And I talked to you back then. And David, I believe, talked to you. Right?
I remember it was 2017, yes. And I had just got back from Asia, and I was horribly jet lagged. And I remember that conversation with you. That might be the only thing I remember that particular day.
So, it was memorable. What a great conversation it was.
So most of the work, you know, we do is we had been, you know, in-person programs, but everything has pivoted to live online, and which has really opened up a remarkable opportunity to work even more internationally than we were before. And so we love doing long-term leadership development programs as well as keynote speaking.
Well, we are so blessed not to have one, but both of you today on Thank God for Monday.
And what prompted you to start doing this kind of research?
Yeah, it's a great question. So with our initial book that we wrote together and the work that we were doing with organizations all over the world, we were hearing a constant refrain as we would talk with executives. You know, you'd have discussions with these senior leaders and they would say things like, you know, I'm frustrated that I'm the only one that's seeing problems and solving them. Why aren't my people thinking about these things and taking effort and coming up with solutions to improve our customer's experience or to improve this process or efficiency? I mean, it's right there. Sometimes it's literally a solution is sitting right next to them 5 feet away and they wouldn't see it. And then we would go and do training with the frontline leaders in those same organizations. And we would frequently hear things like, you know, no one really wants to hear my opinion. They're just going to do what they want. And, you know, we would see this gap and wonder, like, are you guys working for the same organization? And so that sparked some curiosity in us. Why does this happen? What's going on here? What can great leaders do to overcome it? And so we decided to partner with the University of Northern Colorado's Social Research Lab to do some research. And we did an in-depth quantitative and qualitative study. We did the quantitative part through surveys and research and so on. But then we also did a number of deep dive case studies with partner organizations in a range of different industries, from healthcare to finance, even defense industry. And so a wide variety to figure out why these things happen and what great leaders can do about them. And so that's what started us down the road of this particular research.
Wow. And it just sounds like an enormous amount of work that you guys had to put in, but I'm sure that the benefits have really exponentially increased from that kind of research.
Oh, well, yeah. Thank you. It was a lot of work.
3 years making for this book. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. One of the things that you mentioned, which I found interesting, was that employees seem to sometimes hold back their ideas for how to improve because they might not think that their voice is going to be heard. Are there any other reasons you feel employees might hold back their ideas and their best practices?
Yeah, so one of the main reasons was that people said, you know, nothing will ever happen. So I don't believe anything's going to happen. Almost half of the folks in the research said nothing will ever happen as a result. Then interesting, 67% said that their leadership operates under the notion of this is the way we've always done it.
Wow.
And then really interesting, 40% said that they lacked the confidence to share their ideas.
And then we had a 49% who said, I am not regularly asked by my leader for my ideas. And so, you know, you've got these situations where sometimes leaders are thinking, well, but I have an open door. I want to hear ideas, but it's very passive. And so people feel sometimes if I'm not being asked, I'm not interested.
And then the most surprising element of the research was that 56% said the reason I'm not going to share is because I won't get credit. And it's interesting because when we share that, you know, from a keynote stage or you hear the audience gasp, they're like, yup, that is true. I once didn't get credit. And then afterwards, everybody's telling me us about the stories of the time they didn't get credit. And that seems like such a simple leader thing for leaders to be able to do, right? To acknowledge where the ideas are coming.
Right, right. And it feels like this is something that could really harm employee morale if they come up with an idea, they share it, and then their manager or whoever it is winds up getting the credit for it, especially publicly. That could really hurt employee morale.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's very, very fascinating. That would be very surprising to me. I'm curious, possibly Gene in the audience as well, were there any other findings that kind of hit you right between the eyes and the wow, I didn't expect that?
Yeah, some of it was just the stories and examples of just really toxic leadership behavior that was shutting people down. And some of those individual stories were fairly disconcerting.
I think for me, a couple other things that were interesting in terms of the research, in terms of the, as we're doing the literature review and getting to understand about psychological safety and so on, you can't go into this realm without knowing the work of Dr. Amy Edmondson from Harvard. She wrote a book called The Fearless Organization. And two of the psychological aspects of human nature that she talks about, and that I think every leader, you need to be aware of these if you want to create a team where everybody's contributing all the time. First is our tendency to overweight negative experiences. And so we talk with people who said, yeah, I'm not sharing. I tried that. Not happening. Well, when did you try it? Well, it was 6 years ago. Are you still working for that manager? Oh, no, it was a different company, but I'm never making that mistake again. And so we overweight, and those are extreme examples, but it's a human tendency that we have where we take that one pain that happened and project it out for the rest of life, and I'm never doing that again, when we're overweighting that experience. And then the flip side of that is that we tend to discount the future, which is when we have a suggestion to make or a opportunity to speak up or to raise our hand, we discount the future benefits that would accrue from doing that. And so on the one hand, we're going to avoid that pain by not trying that again. And then we underestimate the positive that it would do for us, for our team, for our customers, all of which leads to a tendency for people to not raise their hand. Silence is safer. And so as a leader, if you want to overcome that, these are the things you've got to be aware of.
Maybe this is an unfair question, but I believe, Karen, you mentioned there were some real life stories that you came across. I don't want to certainly pry into confidentiality or clients or whatever, but is there one that you could comfortably share with the listeners?
Yeah, there's one from the book where we were facilitating a program and this woman raised her hand and she said, the other day a doctor was coming in and to do a procedure that I knew that he had not talked to the parents about. And I was worried it could harm the child. So I locked the door, locked the doctor out of the patient's room. And, you know, I thought, you know, that was her moment of courage that she was, you know, that's how she had to step up and be courageous in that moment. And you think, if it takes courage like that, just to show up and do your basic job. And I asked her, I said, so why do you stay? Why would you stay working in an organization like that? And she said, because I care so much about the children. You know?
Beautiful. Wow.
Yeah.
And with everything that's going on right now with COVID and quarantining and how places of employment have been impacted, why are your findings so important, especially right now?
Yeah, we have found and we're hearing from business leaders repeatedly how important they are, because the deck has been shuffled, the world has been turned upside down, and any organization that wants to make it and stay competitive and deliver value, and whether you're delivering value on behalf of customers that you serve in a for-profit context, or you're delivering value by the service you provide as a nonprofit organization, doesn't matter. We need every idea we can get, and you don't know where those are going to come from. And the greatest asset you have on your team and in your organization are the people who can think creatively, who can think empathetically, and connected to one another and to the work that you're doing. And those ideas are going to be the difference makers going forward. And so the ability to cultivate those, to draw them out, they're not all going to work, but you never know the one that's going to spark the one that is going to make the difference for you.
Yeah. Imagine you have two managers and one, I mean, because there's no book that says how to lead in a pandemic, right? So you've got one manager goes, oh, I got it all figured out. I'm going to do this, this, this. Everybody do what I say. And another manager says, I don't know that I have all the answers. But I want to listen to you. I want to get your best thinking. How do you think we can still be productive and serve our customers or our students well while we're working from home? What ideas do you have? Who's going to come up with a better plan? Right. So that's, I think that's really where the difference is.
It's so important. And I think some managers, especially right now, like you mentioned, they've never been through this. And for some managers, I'm sure they feel the pressure that they're supposed to know all the answers. And it's good news, actually, to hear that they don't have to be burdened with that. They could admit it, right? They don't know everything. And so hearing from their employees, it sounds like might be a good way to help them through it.
Yes. In fact, feeling the pressure that you somehow have to have all the answers, even pre-pandemic, it's impossible. The world is such a complex and nuanced place anymore, and the work that we're doing has so many different aspects that at any kind of scale, it's basically impossible for you to have all of the answers. As a leader, and we get at this in courageous cultures, your job isn't to have all the answers. It's to be incredibly clear about where you need answers and to ask really clear questions that help draw out all of those ideas. And so that's the switch in thinking, the different framing and perspective that effective leaders, particularly in times like this, can have.
One of the things being at St. Francis College and Seton Hall, to a bit of a less extent, but us being a Franciscan school, St. Francis was one of great vulnerability. If I'm hearing correctly, the leader today really needs to be vulnerable. Yes?
Yeah, and we just saw such a beautiful example of this last week. We were working, we were doing a live online program. It was about 110 fairly senior folks, and the senior most leader, for a half an hour, looked into the camera like this and said, "This is how this has been for me." And he described his experience and what happened when he learned that his 3-year-old twins had been exposed to COVID and the stress of that and how he has been struggling to try to, because first it was a global organization. So first he was dealing with the team in China and thinking this was going to be a problem only for the China team. And then as it became a problem for the Europe team, and now it's a problem for his American team, and how tired he is. And how worried he is about all the, and just this level of vulnerability. And I mean, people were dialed in, right? That's what they needed to hear. And he said, and I don't know all the answers. That's why we're here today. We're going to come up with ideas. Karen and Dave are here to help us tap into our best thinking. And the level of respect and his team's ability to follow him and come up with great ideas after that level of vulnerability was enormous.
Maybe this is an unfair question. Could you sense surprise of the team that their fearless leader would be so vulnerable? That to me sounds like it's very rare in a corporate setting today, in an international corporate setting.
It can be. I think he has a track record of being that kind of leader. And so I think his team was incredibly dialed in and connected, and it's what they've come to expect from him. But it was that in a
on steroids.
It was the first time they had been able to connect with him in that depth and that level over the last 4 or 5 months of everything. That's
because these were not his direct reports. This was a skip level.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So they know him to be that way, but they were getting that for the first time. And I mean, it was a remote distance call like this one, but you metaphorically could have heard a pin drop. It was very cool.
Wow.
Wow. And I've actually also heard of some employers, what they're doing right now as it relates to returning to on-site work. They're actually sending surveys to all staff asking their opinions and what they're thinking would be the best practice for returning to work. I just feel like it goes back to what you were saying, that it's not just management who should be making the decision.
You know, you're absolutely right. It's funny. I was just writing about that on our next blog post upstairs. But every client we're talking to has had some kind of a survey of some point of how safe do people feel? What would be good? And, you know, I think that you are seeing a really good level of engagement.
It's so important. And a lot of our listeners today are people who are everyday employees who work as part of teams. So is there anything that you could tell us about how you're working with teams right now to find more courage and resiliency during this time?
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of different aspects, and we do some work around helping people to think about their own hopes and fears. And in courageous cultures, we call this navigate the narrative, because this is something that both as leaders and as teams, if we're going to move forward, when we talk about courage, like it's an uncertain future that we're facing, and nobody has all the answers. Nobody knows exactly where it's going. And so as a leader, tapping into your own moments of courage and grounding yourself in where you have stood up or taken a risky step or done something in a positive way and the values that revealed for you. And then as team members, to be able to acknowledge what are your hopes for the next 12, 18 months and what are your fears, and to surface those and have those conversations. We've been doing that work with teams in small organizations, global tech companies, and everything in between. And they're incredibly powerful in the common sense of concerns that people have. And like, why hide them? Let's get them out on the table and then talk about, okay, how do we move forward with those?
Yeah. And then a simple technique that we've been using, which you can use even if you're on a team, you're not the leader of a team, which is to ask 4 questions. You, what are we underestimating? G, what's got to go? L, where are we losing, and Y, where are we missing the yes? And have about any regard to, you know, maybe how do we stay productive and not lose our minds, right, while we're working from home? Okay, what are we underestimating about that? What's got to go? You know, so for example, what's got to go is maybe what has to go is our strict schedules that everyone is going to work from 8 to 5. Maybe what's got to, you know, where are we missing the yes is that we need to let people pick the hours that they'll be most productive and find some level of overlap that we can collaborate.
really, really incredible, no doubt about it. The working from home, it does seem to give people more flexibility and competitive advantage for organizations who allow their employees to take full advantage of that. We've got two very, very special guests with us today. They are the co-authors of this great book, Courageous Cultures. Their names are Karen Hurt and David Dye, and the subtitle of the book, How to Build Teams of Micro-Innovators, Problem Solvers, and Customer Advocates. And later on, we're going to tell you how to get this fabulous book and where to get it from, certainly. Talking a whole bunch of different things about this great research, took them years to do, pertaining to building courage, certainly building cultures that have courage. And one of the acronyms that you use in the book here, if I'm saying it right, FOSU, F-O-S-U. I think we talked a little bit about this before, but if it's okay with you, can we peel the onion? I really want to do a deep dive for the listeners, Gene and I, on this. What is this FOSU, please?
Yeah, FOSU is fear of speaking up.
Like you're familiar with FOMO, fear of missing out. So FOSU is fear of speaking up.
And that's really where, you know, you get in touch with what is holding you back from speaking up and what are the ideas that you are not contributing. It was interesting when we dug underneath the whole FOSU concept, we said, what are the kinds of ideas you're holding back? And they were not trivial. It wasn't like, oh, let's put kombucha in the break rooms, right? It was, you know, I have an idea to improve the customer experience. I have an idea to improve productivity in a process or the employee experience, which pretty much sums up all the kinds of ideas you need, right? And so that's really, if you've got that fear, you need to know that. And here's the other interesting thing that we found in this research was a lot of times it wasn't their immediate boss. And, you know, as David was saying earlier, so you could be a really great, humble, authentic leader who is asking for ideas. But if your team is holding on to something from the past and you're not aware of it, they still may be holding back and you don't even know they're holding back.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes it's not even what we would classify and what looks like fear of speaking up is a general reluctance. And it may be due to, like, I'm risk averse and I don't want to risk getting swatted down or losing my job or, you know, something like that. But there's also reluctance that comes from different places based on people's experience, personality, and so forth. And, you know, I'm thinking of one executive we talked to who said, you know what, I definitely have some people who are not speaking up, but thinking of one of them, and it's not that he's afraid, it's that he's analytical and he hasn't fully thought it through to the 100%. So he didn't want to share it until he knows it. And so what do I do with that? How do I help cultivate? And so there's ways that you can frame, you know, there's a lot of different reasons that people don't speak up. And to be aware of those as leaders is essential if you're going to help equip them and cultivate that kind of a culture where they do.
Right. And one thing that I was just thinking of was, you know, sometimes the environment and the setting really matters. There might be an employee who isn't comfortable raising ideas as a team, like in a group setting. So maybe during like a weekly one-on-one kind of supervision meeting, that might be a good venue to open up the floor for them to share their ideas.
Absolutely.
You can probably tell Jean is the psychology guru of the two of us, but if I perceive correctly, what you're saying, people bring baggage with them.
Yes.
Or maybe past jobs or past organizations.
Yes. Wow,
that's really something. And yeah, that's the second part of this question, really. Why is this FOSU so rampant in organizations? You want to peel that onion a little bit more, maybe.
Yeah, you know, this just starts with human nature. Like we were talking about earlier, we just have some of those tendencies, the overweighting the past, the discounting the future. And then you've got the add on to that, you've got the standard leadership practices of leaders not asking, people feeling like their ideas don't matter, aren't valued. And that's not always true. But the fact that leaders don't have some of the best practices that we talk about in the book reinforces those kinds of messages, even when they're not true. And this was fascinating in the research that, for instance, we were working with a large financial organization, and they were doing a fantastic job of cultivating people's ideas. They had a really sophisticated suggestion system, and they had crowdsourced. I mean, it was a really cool system. But we were talking with an executive, and he said, "You know what's interesting? We get hundreds of ideas through this thing, but half of them are things that we're already doing." I said, "Oh, okay." So we said, "Your people must feel really good that they're being heard and their ideas are valued." And he said, "You would think that, but those are not the kind of scores we're seeing on our internal employee engagement and pulse surveys."
Wow.
And so we started looking into it. And we said, "So how are you circling back and letting people, those 50% who are contributing ideas that are already implemented, they just don't know, how are you letting them know that their ideas were so good they're already being used?" And he said, "Oh, you know what? We should probably do that." So now think about what's happening for that employee who took the time, thought about something, said, "I've got an idea, put it in, contributed it, and here's nothing." And so how are they feeling? Well, they're feeling all of the things that we already said that were validated in the research. They don't really want to know what I have to say. They're stuck in their ways. Nothing's going to happen if I share an idea. And it just validated all of those negative messages, even though they're not true.
Wow. You know?
And then
the
there were three
toxic, so important.
Yeah. There were three toxic leadership behaviors too that we saw that really would shut people down. Shame, blame, and intimidation. And
oof.
Yeah. So that's the leader who puts all of the people's performance in a stack ranked order at a company offsite, and then goes to the bottom of the list and hands around a microphone and asks them to explain why they're at the bottom, right?
Oh,
right. That's shame, and that's intimidation. Or a leader who, a decision did not go well, and yet it was her decision. But when once they know that the decision didn't go well, she's blaming everybody else, all her direct reports at the table, and saying, "You know, you shouldn't have done this. Why did you decide that?" And everybody's looking at her going, "You made the final call." You know, so that, and if you've got any of that or any of the Me Too, anything.
Any of those toxic courage crushers, like we say that if you're, people have to use all the courage they could muster in a day just to come to work and survive that day, because you as a leader are, and we would consider this leadership cowardice, but if you're tolerating any of that kind of, you know, toxic behavior in your organization, bullying, harassment, any of that, if you're tolerating any of it, you're asking people to use up all of their courage just to survive the day. And you're not going to be getting any of the creativity, the thinking, the positive contributions that you need.
Gina, I think you have the most important question for last there.
Yes, yes. Karen and David, thank you so much again. Now we want to know, where can our loyal listeners purchase your book, Courageous Cultures, and how can they get in contact with you?
Well, you can purchase the book anywhere books are sold. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Indie Books, any of those locations. To get in touch with us and learn more about the book and download a free chapter and the foreword by Dr. Amy Edmondson, you can go to CourageousCulturesBook.com, or you can come to our website, which is LetsGrowLeaders.com.
Thank you so much. And listeners, after you've connected and checked out the book, CourageousCulturesBook.com, also remember to follow our Thank God for Monday social media. You could find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn, and stay updated on our upcoming guests.
Thank you.
Gina, thank you very, very much. David and Karen, we can't thank you enough for being our very, very special guests today on Thank God for Monday. We've been enlightened, yes, but we've been much more inspired. Someone like me, I happen to have a great boss, but I feel free to bring ideas to the table. I'm even now motivated to bring some more ideas to the table. And I hope those, and I have a good feeling that those who might be out there have been a bit hesitant. You know, that FASU we talked about before, that fear of speaking up, that fear is going to be obliterated. And we will indeed have more and more great ideas come to the table. One of the things that was shared with me in some of the studies that I did was that people are the issue, everything else is just detail. And you reinforced for me today, it's still about people. And that's really, really very motivating to me, certainly. So indeed, many, many thanks, continued great success and great contribution of this work that you're doing, not only here in the States, but around the world.
And, well, thank you for all that you are doing and the contributions you're making with this show and the other work that you're doing. It was an absolute delight to join you today.
Well, you have an open mic here, so if you continue writing books, certainly let us know. We're happy to have you come on.
That's all right, sure. Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Listeners, sadly, once again, we're out of time. Gene and Brother Greg saying our hope and prayer is that when you wake up on Monday morning, just like Karen and David do, you'll say, thank God for Monday.